This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is Ready, Set, Bet with Matt Brown on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Our number three, Ready, Set, Bet here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Matt Brown in here. 7-1 Orioles over the Rays in the sixth inning. We're scoreless Diamondbacks and Braves. Pirates with an early 2-0 lead on the Red Sox. That's in the top of the second. Scoreless Yankees and Jays. Scoreless White Sox and Tigers. Scoreless Marlins and Reds. Same deal with the Padres and Guardians, Nationals and Mets. And by the way, that Padres and Guardians actually in a rain delay there, so they delayed the start of that one. So we'll see when they actually get going. So you have a little bit of time if you want to make some bets there as that one gets delayed at least a few minutes to get going. Now head out to the guest line here, your friend and mine. You can find him right here on the network now every single Friday evening, of course, over at the Sports Gambling Podcast Network as well. He is Sean Green. How you doing, buddy?
I'm doing great. I mean, just 16 at preseason games. Did pretty good at ATS. Had a moneyline dog winner with fading the New York Jets. So, yeah, off to a good start here.
Yeah, what is the strategy for you when it comes to preseason? I mean, like, I'm the guy that I just feel like no team should ever be more than a 3-point dog. And so it's kind of like once as soon as it gets to like 3, 3.5, I'm just like, I'm just betting the dog. We're over handicapping then at that point of what third teamers and guys that are going to get cut in, you know, a couple weeks are going to look like and all of that. I'm just kind of like, is any of these teams really a 3-point favorite over the other one?
Yeah, no, it's a, I mean, totally agree. When you're getting big, you like the money line dogs, or at least the dog and the points. The points obviously matter a little bit more because of how low the totals are. But yeah, I mean, as simple as it is, there's coaches who care about the preseason, there's coaches who don't, and then there's types of quarterbacks that succeed in the preseason, and there's types that certainly don't. And I mean, Bears money line and then Bucks money line were two nice hits from the podcast this week. And the Bears money line was a pretty simple handicap. I thought Tyson Bagent was better than any of the Browns quarterbacks. Yeah. And we saw, I know Deshaun Watson, the stat line looked okay, but that fumble on fourth down, that was really bad. Case Keenum came in and gave the Bears some good looks there. And Ben Johnson, even though he came from the Dan Campbell coaching tree, you would think he doesn't care about preseason. He's now 3-0-1 straight up. So the fact that they were a home dog, that was very appealing. And then the Bucks, you know, similar kind of thing of, hey, we got a mobile quarterback, and those are usually guys that do pretty well in Jalen Daniels, who's expecting to get a lot of run here in the second half. So I love taking the Bucks there live on the money line. And the thought was like, hey, Jalen Daniels is going to be in there late. He's going to be running around against the Jets third stringers. And he did a little bit of running, but actually I thought he threw the ball pretty well. Mm-hmm. Jalen Daniels personally owns myself and the podcast a bunch for taking all his dart throw Heisman tickets over the years at like 300, 400 to one. Cause you get sucked in by the athleticism. So slowly digging out of my Jalen Daniels Heisman hole. But yeah, those are the type of guys, quarterback situations, especially when they're dogs. So it's a fun market to break down.
Let's talk about a couple of teams here that are definitely towards the bottom of odds boards, bottom of win totals, but you might have differing opinions on the two teams in the Dolphins and the Titans.
Yeah, let's start there with the Miami Dolphins. My Miami Dolphins. It's crazy to say I love this Dolphins team, but I love this Dolphins team compared to how low the expectations are, right? Everyone's kind of painted them as, oh, they're tanking. They have all this dead cap. And sure, I think that impacts their ceiling. But I definitely think this Dolphins team can get to four wins, just starting with Malik Willis. Maybe it's an eye test thing. Maybe it's a guy who watched him a bunch at Liberty in college. I love the idea that a mobile quarterback is coming in and he's going to be running all over the place. And you want to talk about week one. I know you're making a case for the Raiders. And certainly when you're talking big picture survivor strategy, getting the Raiders out of the way week one would feel really good. But Malik Willis, I think, is going to be running a ton. And we've seen what running quarterbacks have been able to do as far as their impact on the running back as well. When you have to play those read options and you have to decide, like, wait, do I go after Achan here, or do I read the fake there with Malik Willis? That creates some huge seams. I saw it firsthand when Saquon Barkley joined the Eagles in 2024, and Saquon had an awesome year, partly because the linebackers have to play the fake a little bit differently when you got Jalen Hurts and Saquon Barkley. And I think a similar theory applies here with the Dolphins. And then we've seen some of their rookie receivers, in particular Caleb Douglas, had that amazing snag in the preseason game. I understand the concern about the receivers, and that certainly is. I like Dulcich. I like Caleb Douglas, the rookie there. I think their offensive line is better than people think. Their center, Aaron Brewer, was second in Protector of the Year vote. So I think they're going to be able to compete in some games where people don't think they're going to be able to compete. And on the other side, you have a defensive mind in Jeff Hafley being able to elevate this defensive roster, which, again, thin of blue chip talent, and certainly that's why they're 3.5. I think they're a fun alt win total, like them getting to 6 wins or something like that. Very doable in my mind.
Now, this Titans team, on the other hand, one of the teams that is going to be towards the bottom of odds boards and certainly towards the bottom of the league, most likely, leaving the room open for there to be a giant leap there, I guess, with Cam Ward. But how are you approaching them?
Yeah, I watched Cam Ward all season. He started all the games there. And I thought there were some flashes, right? You see the potential with Cam Ward. I bet him a ton when he was at Incarnate Ward, made us a ton of money there in that FCS season. But also, it's kind of crazy to me that everyone's like, well, okay, obviously the Titans have their franchise quarterback. Obviously he's going to make a massive step up here in year two with Brian Daboll and Robert Saleh. First off, Robert Saleh and Brian Daboll responsible for a lot of losses. I know Brian Daboll he's getting a lot of mileage off of fixing Josh Allen. He wasn't able to fix Daniel Jones. Daniel Jones actually got a lot better when he finally wasn't playing for Brian Daboll. So I don't know if Brian Daboll's the instant fix. And again, you don't want to take too much away from preseason as far as wins, losses, scores like that. But eye test, there was a lot of the issues and bad habits that we saw in Cam Ward in his rookie year show up against the backups, against the 49ers in that preseason game. So I like the under 6.5 wins. I don't think their offensive line is that good. I know they got Jeffrey Simmons on the defensive side. I worry a ton about their secondary, and maybe Robert Saleh can get the best out of them. But I also look at this division and think it's pretty competitive. I mean, you got the Jags and the Texans up top there. Colts are a bit of a mystery, I guess. We'll see with the Daniel Jones health. Shane Steichen has shown like a pretty high floor with that team, even with rough quarterback play. So I don't know. Everyone seems to, I'm hearing a lot of like the Titans being the darling team, but I'm a little skeptical.
So let's, people can see, obviously, you guys, we're in the green shirt. If you're watching, if you're driving along, let me just paint the picture right here. We have a green Eagles shirt with a green Eagles hat. And then we also have Fly Eagles Fly with all the jerseys and everything about, you get it. The guy's an Eagles fan. Okay. So let's talk about that. You said removing the homerism at all. You do have a long shot ticket on Devontae Smith.
Yeah, Devontae Smith, Offensive Player of the Year. Again, removing all homerism.
Yes.
And it's at 125-1. I just bet it at the Circa. I liked it at 100-1. I like it even better here at 125-1. Look at what JSN did last year. I think we could be seeing a similar year here from Devontae Smith, and it tracks in a lot of ways. One, the Seahawks, they get rid of DK Metcalf, and that creates a massive opportunity for increase in production for JSN. Part of the reason the Eagles felt okay moving on from AJ Brown, one, the guy was a huge pain in the ass. Two, they thought that Devontae Smith could make that leap in production and have a JSN type year. Internally, they viewed him like that. And I think Jalen Hurts can throw the ball. I'm optimistic about the Sean Mannion offense. Even if you don't think Jalen Hurts is this amazing passing quarterback, did you think Sam Darnold was that last year? And you think about the Seahawks offense, oh, they're just going to pound the rock, et cetera, et cetera. Doesn't that apply to the Philadelphia Eagles here? And then I'll go back to Devontae Smith in college. in 2019, he had a pretty good year, right? But he was also Henry Ruggs, Jerry Jeudy. He was in that mix there with those two other stud receivers in college. And then those guys graduate to the NFL in 2020, where he gets to be the lead receiver. He has an insane year. He wins the Heisman Trophy. We remember him in the national championship. The guy's still scoring touchdowns. And eye test, I think the guy is just an elite athlete. So I think the Sean Mannion offense is going to open up stuff. I think all that AJ Brown production, even though he clearly wasn't happy enough, the guy was getting over 1,000 yards, eight touchdowns, all that kind of stuff. And Devontae Smith is just going to have a wide open path to a huge increase in production. So if this Eagles offense passing hits in any sort of way, he's set for a massive year.
So in our final minute here, give me your outlook here for the Eagles. Obviously, this is a division that I think people are saying, you know what? It's pretty open. I think I could, you know, and they're trying to talk themselves into the Commanders, trying to talk themselves into the Cowboys. What is the floor? What's the ceiling here for the Eagles?
Well, the floor is, the floor is 11 wins. Yeah. Nick Sirianni, 4 years in a row with 11 wins. Even if you think Nick Sirianni's a clown, do you think Vic Fangio's a clown? Look at that defensive line. Look at that secondary. You got Tariq Woolen, Quinyon Mitchell, and Cooper DeJean. I think, again, go to any sort of ratings that you trust independently of my own green eyes here. The Eagles have a top five O-line and top five D-line. So you put those together and you have a quarterback who's pretty good at not turning the ball over. You have Saquon Barkley, you have Devontae Smith, and you have a head coach that everyone thinks is a joke and yet still makes the playoffs every season, two conference championships, one Super Bowl. So I think the floor is 11 wins. So obviously love the over here. And I don't think the division's going to be that competitive. Eagles win the NFC East at plus 120. Let's go, baby.
Hey, I am not an Eagles fan and I have the same bet, my friend. I just don't get all of the love for these other teams. I just cannot quite get there with all of this. You can get those takes and more right here on the network every single Friday evening. And of course, you want to go in and subscribe to the Sports Gaming Podcast Network at Sean T. Green over on the Twitter machine. Sean, appreciate the time, buddy, and good luck.
You're here because you want an edge. That's what separates listeners from winners. But let's be real, mindset alone doesn't get bets home. Pros win because they've got the tools, the data, and the discipline. And now so can you. VSiN Pro gives you access to the same real-time insights the sharps use. No secrets, no fluff, just actionable info that moves markets. Tap the link and see why serious bettors are turning knowledge into profit with VSiN Pro.
Welcome back to Ready, Set, Bet with Matt Brown on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Ready, Set, Bet here on VSiN. Looking at the baseball scoreboard real quick. 10-1 Orioles now over the Rays. That thing got out of control quickly. Still scoreless Diamondbacks and Braves. Pirates still have that 2-0 lead over the Red Sox there in the third inning. Yankees on the board now. 1-0 over the Blue Jays, middle of the third. Tigers up 3-0 on the White Sox in the bottom of the second. And again, a game that matters a lot there in the AL Central. Scoreless Marlins and Reds, scoreless Padres and Guardians, because that one's still on a rain delay. 1-0 Nats over the Mets, and we're scoreless in the Phillies and the Twins. Keep you updated there on all the comings and goings in that. And we're still got the two-stroke lead, Scotty Scheffler over Sung Jae and Sam Burns. Now let's head back out to the guest line here. And so kind to come back in today, Jake Crane. Of course, of Crane and Cone over there on three at Jake Crane over underscore on the Twitter machine. I felt like the conversation got a little rushed there at the end yesterday. We didn't get to complete everything. And so appreciate you giving us a few more minutes of your time here.
Yeah, Matt, look, I feel like the first movie was pretty good. And unlike pretty much every other sequel ever, I think the sequel may be even better. So I'm glad y'all had me back. I appreciate it.
I like it a lot. And honestly, we left yesterday and didn't give you enough time here. We were talking about kind of the Heisman Trophy, and you get CJ Carr at 7-1 and Arch is sitting there at 7.5. You get into the double digits of Moore and Mensa, Sayin, Trinidad, Chambliss, Josh Hoover. You get all these, you know, obviously we're looking at quarterbacks here in this market. I mean, we know this is basically a quarterback award, and especially now with so many different quarterbacks that have such huge pedigrees heading into the season. Is there anybody down the board a little bit? I mean, is it a Mateer? Is it like, coming out of nowhere, a Lenora Sellers? Is there any of these other quarterbacks that are kind of starting to get buzz in the draft world, saying, you know, guys saying that these guys, this guy could play his way into the first round or whatever. I mean, we saw what Burrow did, right? Burrow was a second, third round guy and then played his way all the way up to number one overall pick in the Heisman and everything like that. Is mm-hmm. is there anybody in college football that could do that this year?
Well, you know, Jaden Mayava is a guy at USC. Mm-hmm. If you're looking for like bang for your buck, yeah. right? I mean, I could sit up here and you mentioned some of the guys that are the obvious favorites. You know, Mensah's up there too, a guy we talked about a little bit yesterday. Mayava at USC, if you can get that type of return on your investment for a Lincoln Riley mm-hmm. coach quarterback at a place like USC, I don't think that's crazy. You know, Kevin Jennings as well at SMU. You look at the ACC, you look at that schedule, he could really run some numbers up. And we've seen quarterbacks have big years where their teams didn't make the playoff and win the Heisman. So those are two guys. Mateer, kind of in that middle for me. Mm-hmm. The way that Oklahoma is going to play defensively, you know, they're going to get the ball a lot on offense. I feel like the run game is going to be a little bit better. You know, John's hand after they had to, you know, basically put it in that thing from Avatar to fix it. Looks like it's going to be better. And I do think Mateer really kind of catches a little more hate than he should, because Oklahoma, similar to Alabama, couldn't run the ball at all last season. John Mateer was their leading rusher. You just can't live like that in these type of conferences and put up the numbers without balance offensively. It's daggum near impossible.
So when you look here, I'm going to throw one more name at you that is getting, you know, so much buzz and so much love and Mestemaker. I mean, like, this is like, you know, just going on and on and on about him. I mean, it's 65-1, at least at DraftKings. Perhaps we could, you know, even get something down bigger than that. Is the hype gotten a little too out of control now, or do you believe that it's fair?
Well, you know, I think with Drew, and there's a couple guys that came over from North Texas. Mm-hmm. I mean, you look at the running back as well. Hawkins is I believe his name. I think he's a really good player. The question is what's around them, because that's what makes football the greatest sport of all time. It's not baseball. One guy can't go out there and throw a perfect game and you win because of it. It's not basketball where, you know, one guy can go out there and get a triple-double. Jokic can pretty much single-handedly win the game, or LeBron or some of these other guys. Mm-hmm. If all 11 are not moving in sync, or at least 10 of the 11 are not moving in sync, then it's really, really hard to put up the type numbers and have the type season you want in this sport. It's the ultimate team sport. So I love Drew's ability. I love Eric Morris as a coach. Mm-hmm. I think it was probably the most underrated hire of this whole cycle. I just don't think Oklahoma State has the depth up front and the personnel around him for him to be able to put up the type numbers to win the Heisman Trophy. I think Oklahoma State's going to be a lot better. But you look at, you know, next year, depending on kind of how this works out, I would not be shocked if we look at an Eric Morris, you know, coached quarterback winning the Heisman within the next 5 years. It's just, I don't know if Drew has enough soldiers around him to win the battle and then the war.
So the Big 12, kind of the forgotten conference out there. It seems like we talk about all the other conferences. We don't really talk about the Big 12. We did give Texas Tech a moment there for with the Sorsby stuff. But outside of that, like, we haven't really given a ton of love to all that. What have you, as you've dug into all this, what do you make of that conference? What do you make of these teams? Are any of them actually truly really good? And is there any team that you've started to spot and be like, you know what, at the end of the day, this team's as good as any of these other ones. This team could beat Texas Tech.
Well, you know, it's hard to say this because we saw what Arizona State did a couple years ago, but I feel like that was kind of an anomaly, getting picked in the bottom of the conference, winning it, making the playoff, you know, pushing Texas to the brink, even without Jordan Tyson. I look around that league and it just feels like there's, you know, really just two good-looking girls at the bar. That's it. Everybody else just kind of walking around. They're normal with Texas Tech and BYU. But kind of the bigger picture that you alluded to, I think that's the biggest point. And that's why if you're Brett Yormark in the Big 12, and look, I don't think Brendan Sorsby was the greatest thing since sliced bread, but I do think he's a better player than Hammond. I think he made Texas Tech national title good with what his potential could be. Now, you look at that conference, it's going to be Texas Tech and BYU. They don't play each other in the regular season. They're going to play in the Big 12 title. We'll see kind of what the overall records are if both of those teams will get in. We know that the winner of the Big 12 pretty much is automatically going to get in. I just think the ceiling is winning the Big 12. Not that they couldn't win one playoff game, but Texas Tech, I don't think has the quarterback to do it. I think they pretty much have everything else. I mean, you lose David Bailey, you lose Rodriguez at linebacker, but the way they've management and the personnel they've acquired, they're going to be really good on defense again. I like the offensive line. I like the group around the quarterback. I just don't think Hammond is good enough for them to win a title. I don't think Bear is a natural enough passer, and I don't think BYU has the depth on the line of scrimmage, especially on the offensive line. Not that the first five are bad, but we know guys get beat up, and that was really their Achilles heel last year when they played Texas Tech, was the line of scrimmage. So I think the ceiling for Texas Tech and BYU is the Big 12. I don't see the Big 12 having a team advance to the Final Four, let alone a national title game.
Talking to Jake Crane, Crane and Cone over there on the On3 Network, at Jake Crane _ on the Twitter machine as well. Let's head to the Big 10. You get Ohio State. You get Oregon. Mm-hmm. You get Indiana. Obviously, a lot of the talk around the conference is going to be around those three teams. When you look at those three, is there a big difference in those three in your eyes? And is there a sleeping giant there in the Big Ten that maybe should be getting a little bit more love?
I think they're all really strong. You know, if USC's schedule wasn't so brutal, and I've been as tough on Lincoln Riley as the brisket he makes. I mean, nobody's been tougher on him than me, but I do think this is the best team they've had from a wholesome point of view. When you look at that roster from the line of scrimmage out, including Maiava, I think they can cause some problems. I'm interested to see Penn State with this schedule, right? I think this is one of those instances, and I like Rocco Becht. I like Matt Campbell. Coach Campbell does a lot better job when a fan tries to fight him at the beginning of the season. I would suggest maybe somebody say something to him to get him going. But at the end of the day, they could go 10-2 and get in the college football playoff or miss the college football playoff. We've seen that happen before when you look at their schedule. So I don't think it's crazy to sprinkle a little bit of coin on Penn State possibly being in the Big Ten title game, because what I love about looking at the Big Ten is Ohio State and Oregon and Indiana and USC and Michigan and Penn State and these guys, they're going to play each other. It's not like a lot of people are ducking anybody. Penn State, I think, has the best schedule when you look at a team that could possibly make that move. Michigan, I've just got to see it. I think winning him is a huge upgrade from Sharon Moore. We'll see if Bryce Underwood develops. I think they have the pieces to be able to compete. Outside of that, Nebraska, no shot, really. We had Will Compton on the show the other day. I mean, 8-4, I think, would be a good year for Matt. But no, I don't see a huge difference from an overall balance and talent standpoint between the three teams that you listed. And can I say something about Kurt Cignetti and Cignetti in Indiana real
Absolutely.
Quick, Matt? Would you mind?
Absolutely.
This is driving me nuts that people are like, oh, Cignetti, you should stop saying this. You should stop talking. Here's the way I look at it. You go 16-0. You go 27-2. You go 16-0, you win the Big Ten, you win the national title, you have the number one pick overall, you have the Heisman winner. You can say whatever you want to say. I don't care. These people that are like, oh, Indiana's scared. How can you say that when you watch what they did against the big dogs? Mm-hmm. Now, if they had collapsed against the big dogs, I would understand that. But Cignetti went toe-to-toe with them. He got all the Infinity Stones at Indiana. I'll say that again, at Indiana. So in my opinion, you do that, I don't even think he should have had to show up for Big Ten Media Day. So all these people are saying, well, Sig's talking too much, doing that, the other. Man, y'all got to be quiet. Shut up with that. The man just dominated college football at the same place where Jimmy Chitwood grew up.
And also, you got to do something. You got to keep the buzz going around Indiana football, because no one thinks about Indiana football, right?
I mean, it's for sure. Look, you win, you talk. That's the way this thing works. So it's just funny watching everybody, you know, just look at Cignetti and say all these things. The man is doing incredible work. Say what you want.
You got 20 seconds here. You have the right to change your mind between now and then. Who's the final four teams?
Oh, man, I would say give me Miami. Give me Notre Dame. Give me Oklahoma. And give me Georgia.
There we go. No Texas from Jake. No Texas from Jake Crane. I like it, buddy. I appreciate the time. Thanks for coming back, guys. Everybody, Crane and Cone over there on the On3 Network at Jake Crane _ as well. Appreciate the time and good luck, buddy.
Thanks, man. I thought the sequel was awesome. Appreciate it, Matt.
Absolutely was. We got that college football guide out right now. If you want more college football, over there at beeson.com/subscribe.
Welcome back to Ready, Set, Bet with Matt Brown on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Good game, good effort there, Sam Burns. Appreciate it. Getting one across the finish line in golf this year has just been impossible. Scottie Scheffler left the door open. He bogeys three. The only problem is that Sam Burns doubled three, drove it into the trees, punched out successfully, but then put the third shot into the water from 181 out. double bogey. He is now three shots back of Scotty Scheffler, two shots back of Sung J M. So, Sam Burns, spray the driver. We said the way, the key to success at TPC Southwind is to be straight, do not be wet, and then just make the easy putts. He didn't do a lot of those there. So unfortunate there. We'll have to do a massive rally to get that ticket across the finish line. So hopefully you played some placement market stuff on Sam Burns. That's what we say every time over on Long Shots. That's why we've still been able to make money this season. We've been on all the guys. They just haven't won the tournament, but you know, we back up every one of our, we don't, since we don't have each way betting, we just back up each one of our outrights with some sort of placement market bet. The shorter the guy, the shorter the placement market bet, the longer the guy, the longer the placement market bet. You're basically playing on your handicap, kind of hitting the upside, but not quite getting there. So I have a, well, I mean, he could still fall out. I have top five on Burns, but I mean, he could still fall out at this point, with considering he's only now a stroke up on Siwoo and Tommy Fleetwood and all that. But that's kind of how we go about it, since we don't have each way betting. Only one guy wins a golf tournament. So you play an outright, then you play a top five, or you play a top 10 or top 20 on them. If you're talking like a triple digit guy, you know, maybe it's top 20 on them. They play really good, just not quite good enough. You get like a 50 to one guy, you play like a top 10 on him. He plays really good, just not quite good enough. 20 to one guy, you play top five. Can't get across the finish line, but you still catch the top five. So that's how we have done it over on the podcast. And so now we're rooting for Sam Burns to hold on to a top five there. Over Major League Baseball, Orioles blew it open. They got our first five home, so thanks for that. The over two runs in the first five. Now it's 10-2. They got 10 runs on 9 hits over there. The Rays, 7 hits, only 2 runs for them. Diamondbacks and Braves are tied at 1. 4 hits for the Braves, 3 hits for the Diamondbacks there. In that one, the Pirates, 2 more on the Red Sox. So now 4-0 for them over the Red Sox. 7 hits already for this Pirates team. We're only in the bottom of the third. Still going here in the bottom of the third. Still 2 on for them. So no slowing down. Yankees 1-0 over the Blue Jays. Top of the fourth inning, each team with 1 hit there in that one. Of course, Dylan Cease on the hill for the Blue Jays. 4-1, Tigers over the Red Sox. 5 hits already for the Tigers. 2 hits for the White Sox. 4-1 there. That's in the end of the third. Reds and Marlins are still scoreless. We're still in a rain delay with the Padres and the Guardians. The Nats added another one, 2-0 over the Mets. And we're still scoreless in the Twins and the Phillies. We do have an interesting look here today. Greg is talking about this Cardinals and Cubs game. I look at this Cubs team, incredibly streaky, right? They're on kind of the good streak right now. And you look, and I understand they're getting Edward Cabrera on the mound for them, coming off of the IL there, or bereavement list, or whatever it was. And he has not looked great by any stretch of the imagination. Hunter Dobbins actually has looked pretty good for this St. Louis team. I think it's a super interesting handicap whenever you look and see that the Cubs are such big favorites in this one over the Cardinals, where you see an Edward Cabrera who on the season has a 5.10 ERA, but it's backed by a 4.32. His whip's 1.40. And if you look over the last 5 starts, it's actually worse. It's a 7.59 ERA backed up by a 4.73. His walk rate climbs all the way up to nearly 12% over his last 5 starts. The K rate just sitting at 20%, which is just very, very average. Hard hit rate at 50% as well. So Cardinals are passed for me there in that one, shockingly enough, because I can't get there with the Cubs as that big of favorites whenever you have Cabrera on the hill. And honestly, this Cardinals team, probably the better pitching matchup, and then also a better look at this with some of these hitters that are in this lineup too. So only the plus money or pass there for me. We talked about a couple of the games that I glossed over with Greg. They're better to be bet on than to watch. I mean, we have the Rockies and Giants, two of the worst teams in all of baseball, going at it today. It is Gabriel Hughes versus Blade Tidwell, if that tells you anything. It is over in San Francisco, so it's not in Colorado, so we can't have fun just scoring a million runs or anything in that one. Just a complete quick pass for me. He also has a look in the Royals and Angels that you'll find over at VSiN.com. That's Noah Cameron versus Ryan Johnson. obviously two bottom feeders as well there with the Royals and the Angels. I think it is at least somewhat interesting here, this Rangers and A's game. This is Cody Bradford versus Jacob Lopez. And if you're not familiar with Cody Bradford, kind of a soft-tossing lefty, one of the guys that surface stats type of stuff doesn't really tell the whole story for him. It's a 2.38 ERA on the season, but it's a 4.33 expected on Bradford, a microscopic K rate of like 13%. And then he still walks guys at about a 7% rate. That's not terrible, but when you have a super low K rate, you really don't want to be putting guys on for free. And then on top of that, he's really kind of, he's running a little bit pure too, like a 270 BABIP against him. I never really love backing the A's considering how terrible they are, but Lopez has been fine and you're actually getting the A's at a plus money price there. So I think that there's a, I think there's a world that exists where that's actually a pretty good bet on the A's as plus money there in that one. We have a game with two of the, I would say, big time arms that are going to come to playoff time. And I'm going to put Logan Henderson in that because we know Scooble is for the Dodgers, but Henderson, again, this Brewers team's not going anywhere. They're definitely making the playoffs. And Logan Henderson is going to be relied upon to go out and give them a quality start and give them a chance to win a game in playoff series. And Logan Henderson's been good by and large for the vast majority of the season. What has not been good is kind of both of these teams' offenses of late, really sputtering in LA, really sputtering with the Brewers. But both of these arms, well, I mean, what can you say? I don't have to give you the resume there for Tarek Skubal. You know exactly what you're getting in him. The season-long stats back up by all the expecteds. He's as good as advertised. Logan Henderson, though, you might not be incredibly on top of. Logan Henderson, a 309 ERA with a lower than a 309 expected, a 256 expected. He has actually been unlucky with a low threes ERA. It's a sub one whip for him. The K rate is up over 30%. The walk rate is down at 5%. I mean, we are actually talking about, as we sit today, one of the elite pitchers in baseball. Just nobody talking about him. We're getting a really good profile from him all over, limiting hard contact, not walking guys, high K rate. I mean, everything that you want in a starting pitcher here in this one. But obviously, anytime you're going up against Skubal, you're going to be a big dog. And they are like very big dogs in this game. I'll give you the latest line right now so that you can look. And it is, you can get them as high as plus 166, 169 at DraftKings for Milwaukee in this. Again, I understand that it's Skubal, but the Dodgers aren't hitting the ball right now. And so even if Skubal has a very, very good start, you don't have to do a lot. And by the way, that bullpen, because they've decided they're going to stick with Diaz, at least for the time being. I cannot imagine that's going to be the case here in another week if he continues doing what he's doing right now. He has been terrible since coming off the IL. And it's weird because it's not like a velocity thing. He's still throwing like 97, 98. It's just not locating at all. And maybe that comes. Maybe that will come around. But it has not come around yet. He's basically given up a run every single time that he's taken the mound. Like he has not had a clean inning, I don't think, since he's come off the IL. And so, like, I'm not even afraid kind of getting to the bullpen in this one against this Dodgers team. So I think plus 169 is more than fair on a Brewers team. Now, that being said, I can look at the starting lineups here. Probably going to be down one of their starters in this one, unless they decide to put Bryce Turang back in the lineup. He's missed the last 3 days. Got some sort of little knee injury thing that's going on with him. And I look down and at second base, he is, yes. So Turang is out of the lineup. So that is a pretty big loss here for this Brewers team, which certainly is worth at least a couple pennies because he's one of their best players. Steals bases, hits for power, hits for average, all the different stuff like that. So do keep that in mind if you want to play that game. But I do like that pitching matchup. If at the very least you want to sit back and you want to watch that one. Guys, most people think sports betting is about picking winners. Ungambled is built with a different idea. Match betting and arbitrage. Ungable backs it up. If you don't turn a profit in your bankroll in 8 weeks, they will refund your membership. To learn more, start with a free guide at ungambled.com/VSIN. That is ungambled.com/VSIN. Use the promo code VSIN for 10% off. Be sharp and look square.
Welcome back to Ready, Set, Bet with Matt Brown on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Set Bet here on VSiN, the sports betting network. Matt Brown taking you home here as we look over. Scottie Scheffler, one over. Sung J.M., one over. Sam Burns, two over. We do have Tommy Fleetwood at one under of the guys kind of at the top of the leaderboard here. So we're looking at 12 under for Scottie Scheffler, a two-stroke lead over Sung J.M., a three-stroke lead over Tommy Fleetwood and Sam Burns. Sam Burns making a hard game even harder as he continues to spray the driver all over the place, into the trees, double bogeys, a five that everybody has been birdieing, basically giving away three strokes to the field on that one, and then into the sand here on hole number five. So Sam Burns not making golf any easier, making a hard game even harder. Not a good way to chase down your friend either when he's the best player in the world. So three strokes back of Scottie Scheffler, one stroke back currently of Sung J.M. Sung J having a problem here as well on this hole. So these guys not tearing it up here early. We'll see if they can turn it around, see if anybody can go after Scottie Scheffler in this one. One more game in Major League Baseball. Greg gave you the reasoning that he liked Houston. I am also on Houston this evening. Brian Wu is a different pitcher away from Seattle for whatever reason, and we're talking like a big difference. Now the ERA is not as bad as it is on the surface where it's a over six ERA, but it is a four over four expected, and the whip is way up. It's weird. It's like I don't really understand what it is, but he just gives up a lot more hits on the road. I mean, we're talking like a 1.43 whip, which is bad. That's just like straight up bad. Not like that's worse than what he normally has. It's just a bad whip. And you just kind of look, the hard contact goes up on the road, just a lot of stuff. So don't know. Really likes the mound there in Seattle, what it is. No, and really likes sleeping in his own bed. No clue. But it does not work out well for him when he goes on the road. And obviously this Houston lineup is better than the lineup that Seattle's rolling out there from hitting perspective. So do like them as slight favorites as well. Along with Greg and I think maybe even a couple other people here at the network that were kind of looking at that price going, why is it so short? Don't really get it. I get the overall statistics for Wu, but you really got to look under the hood and you can see that it's not exactly what you're looking at here. Now guys, don't go anywhere when we get done here. Joe Cirillo is going to take over. You're going to get some live bets Sunday with him. Then Ben Stevens after Joe, we'll get cashing out with Doug Kazarian. And of course you can wake up tomorrow morning with Dave and Jensen there, VSiN by the books. Be curious to see what Jensen has to say about after this weekend of baseball. It's been a little interesting. I'm sure he will have his take on, again, a former big league pitcher on the decision to push Paul Skeens back by the Pirates as well. Remember, he was supposed to start today. They're going to push his start back 3 days. Velocity way down in his last start. They are not saying it's any sort of injury. But, man, we are talking like 3 miles an hour down from where he was averaging last year and like two and a half down from where he was averaging at least over the course of this season as well. So, hope not. Really, really hope that there's no injury there for Skeens. I have a lot of futures stuff on this Pirates team. It might be dead as it is anyway, but certainly going to be dead if Skeens goes on the IL. Trying to get them into the playoffs. They are currently sitting 6.5 games back. We still have 40 games. Not the craziest thing in the world. We've seen these winning streaks. We've seen multiple, 8, 9, 10 game winning streaks by teams this season. But even if we don't get that type of winning streak, we're going to need something out of this Pirates team. Some signs of life. And if Skeens is going to be on the sideline, don't feel very good about that one. Over in Major League Baseball, 10-2, top of the eighth, Orioles over the Rays. And now we have to start talking about these Orioles as a real team. They're a half game out of the final wild card spot. the 60-63 Orioles are in playoff contention and are going to move closer to that today with what looks to be a victory. Now, we still got two more at-bats for the Rays, but 10-2 Orioles over the Rays right now. It's still 1-1 Diamondbacks and the Braves. Top of the fifth inning there in that one over in Atlanta. Pirates have added more. 7-0 now over the Red Sox. Let me dig in here to this one. What's going on? Sandoval, yeah, just getting lit up. 9 hits given up already. 7 earned. So all of them earned. It is, none of these were even fake runs. 7 earned there in that one. You look at the top of this lineup for the Pirates and 2 for 2, 2 for 2, 2 for 2, 1 for 2, 1 for 2, 1 for 2, 1 for 3. Like, there's everybody getting hits. It's a hit parade over there in Pittsburgh, and they certainly need it. 1-1 now, Yankees and Jays. So the Blue Jays have scraped across a run here to tie this one up with the Yankees. Still only 1 hit given up there by Dylan Cease. So far for him, 5 innings, 1 hit, 7 Ks for him. Guys, just nails, just absolute fire right now. Unfortunately, his team can't hit, but he is he's doing everything that he can to give this team the best opportunity to win. 4-1 Tigers over the White Sox in the top of the fifth inning. Still scoreless Marlins and Reds. The rain delay continues between the Padres and Guardians. The Mets have rallied. They were down 2-0 to the Nats. It is now 3-2 in favor of the Mets in the top of the fifth inning. And the Twins get on the board in a big way. 4 runs against the Phillies. So now a 4-0 lead for the Twins over the Phillies. That one in the top of the third inning. Soon as I get off here, the Cardinals and Cubs will have that first pitch. Again, Cubs big favorites in that one. Could only go Cardinals or pass. Couldn't be looking on the Cubs side there with Edward Cabrera on the hill. A little bit earlier, we had on Grant Paulson, and you know, listen, we talked about Major League Baseball. Does a show over there on Major League Baseball Network on the weekends and the mornings, but also does a show Monday through Friday there in D.C. The talk this week, not about the offense for the Commanders and not about what Jaden Daniels and his new weapons, Stephon Diggs, could possibly do, or the health even of Jaden Daniels. Instead, it was about Jaden Daniels and his number being worn by somebody else over at LSU. Now, keep in mind, the number has not been retired at LSU. Joe Burrow's number has not been retired at LSU yet. For whatever reason, Jaden Daniels has taken some sort of issue with all of this and made it public and whatnot. And so I did ask Grant, like, you know, hey, is this something that is actually working its way into training camp and becoming a distraction? This is what he had to say.
Well, I think in the media, covering it is relevant and important, right? I think it's a legitimate story because you wonder then about the judgment of the team around a franchise quarterback who's up for a contract at the end of this mm-hmm. year. So it's like a relevant thing to wonder about the decision-making, the things that are being taken seriously, you know, and who's in Jaden Daniels' ear, so to speak. That said, from a football standpoint, if we're talking about a 7.5 win total or a plus 230 to make the playoffs or any of the other, you know, numbers people are looking at from a betting standpoint, this is absolutely irrelevant. I mean, Jaden Daniels is not taking away from his prep to send cease and desist letters. Nothing about Washington has changed. I've been at every practice in training camp. The preseason game just came and went on Friday night. Daniels didn't play. This changes nothing about their outlook.
He also went on to say that 7.5 win total, he likes the over on that. He is pretty bullish on this team. And, you know, he said it was not outside of being a homer, right? Outside of covering the market, he just thinks that number is a little bit low. Not enough being made of the defense. And certainly you can't assume that there's going to be injury to Jaden Daniels. I mean, that's a very big part of handicapping the NFL, right? It is, when we're doing player props, you assume injury, right? I mean, like, that's why we bet a ton of unders in season-long player props. It is a violent game. It's a car crash on every single play, specifically with running backs and all of that. And, you know, you blindly bet unders more times than not, unless the number just gets egregiously low. But you're betting unders here because guys miss time. Guys miss games. Splits happen that you didn't think were happening. Running back by committee is a real thing, unfortunately. And that being said, you can't handicap the team over the course of a season assuming that the quarterback is going to get hurt. And I think there's kind of a lazy thing going out there with the Commanders. They're just like, yeah, well, you know, the durability of Jaden Daniels, so you can't really take him seriously. Well, I mean, he played the whole series. He played the whole year when he's a rookie. It's not like it's impossible. So it's I don't go that route whenever I'm handicapping teams. I just go about what I know. And what I know is who's going to at least start game one on the field, and then we'll go from there. You can change your handicap. You can change your mind. You can change along with the season. Your priors can go away. You don't have to stick to them no matter what. And so that's kind of how we have to go about all of this. Scottie Scheffler does birdie. Another bogey by Burns. Scheffler now up three on Sung JM. 13 under. Scottie Scheffler, best player in the world, looks like he might be cruising here to a win as we head into the final 50 players next week. Again, don't go anywhere. Joe Serralo coming up after me here. Ben Steven takes over for him. Doug Kazarian late night. Wake up in the morning with Dave and Jensen. Good luck on all your bets.